It is Friday, the 18th of August, and this is Kathy bringing you information and news from Vermilion County. Starting out with the Danville paper, improvements on hold at Palmer Arena by Jennifer Bailey. Another bid opening today might see some better numbers for roof work needed at the David S. Palmer Arena, but an acceptable bid that fits in the arena's budget won't mean work could begin right away. State funding remains a holdup. Arena General Manager Peter Blackman said when arena board members previously sought bids for the roof, bids came back $200,000 higher than we were prepared for. Earlier this year, arena officials announced $850,000 in state funding had been released for building maintenance projects for the arena, with the roof being the top priority. Julius W. Hegler II also has bequeathed $3 million to the arena for a new ice machine and other improvements, including a new ice center entrance, likely on the building's southwest corner. Arena officials had hoped the roof work would start in June. The area over the arena and in the northwest and northeast corners is planned to see a brand new roof. There also be repairs completed to the south portion of the arena's roof. The remainder of the $850,000 in state money will then be looked at for additional renovations and upgrades. Blackman said they hired an architect to work on plans for the roof. That expenditure has been approved by the state, he said. Arena officials budgeted what they thought the roof work would cost, but bids came back higher than expected. Blackman said they also soon thereafter learned that they weren't yet to spend the state grant money on the roof improvements. The work is on hold until the state releases the funds. Arena officials went back to the drawing board with the architect. With the bid opening today, Blackman said they warned all contractors of the state funding situation. We've designed the roofing specs. It just has to get done, Blackman said. Events at the arena will start picking up again in October. There is a slang music fest later this month. Ice will be built around Labor Day, Blackman said. Learn to skate and youth hockey will start after that, and the first Danville Dashers hockey game will be at the end of October. Pancake Day and cheerleading and other events will be coming up. Blackman said of the South Street work taking place in front of the arena, it's a minor inconvenience for a better-looking area. It's just safer for everybody if we can just control that, he said of the new crosswalk, walk, and median area. I think it will be great. Easing the Burden, benefit ride to raise funds to help children by Mary Wyckoff. Thanks to the generosity of area residents, Heart for Life was able to help more than 10 families with ill children last year. A benefit and memorial ride on Saturday hopes to repeat that, as a good turnout is expected for the event. The WAP Memorial Ride will start at 11 a.m., followed by a benefit with raffles, food, music, and auction at the Knights of Columbus Hall, 310 Bryan. Every year it's gotten bigger and better, said Sal Hutchins, one of the organizers. Last year, rain affected turnout for the memorial ride, with about 66 bikes participating, he said. This year, the weather is supposed to be nice, so he's expecting at least 150 bikes to take part in the ride, which honors the late Michael Wapp Ingargiola, who died in 2014. Ingargiola and his wife Nancy started Heart for Life in 2007. The charitable organization's purpose is to help families in the Danville area who are having financial difficulties brought on by expenses related to having a sick or injured child. Sign up for the ride will be at 9 a.m. and kickstands up at 11 a.m. Cost is $20 for bikes and $5 for a passenger. Other vehicles may join the ride too, with the cost being $20 per vehicle and a total of $5 for one or more passengers, with the cost not exceeding $25. The riders will return to the KFC by 3 p.m. and the family-friendly activities will continue until 10 p.m. One of the highlights will be a raffle offering cash prizes of $500, $250, and $100. Raffle tickets are $10 each and may be purchased at several Danville area businesses and also from Heart for Life committee members and local volunteers. We make the bulk of our money off of the raffle, Hutchins said. There also will be a live auction at 5 p.m. featuring unique items and gift baskets. There will be gift cards, Harley and NASCAR items, a weed eater, dartboard, leather goods, grills, and others. Pulled pork and brisket prepared by Jewel Lucas will be available for purchase. Also, WAP t-shirts and Heart for Life memorabilia will be for sale. Two bands, Left for Dead and One Foot In, or One In, will entertain from this year's event. There's going to be a lot going on, Nancy Ingargiola said. We hope people want us want to help us help families with financial situations because of having a sick or injured child. This is the 11th year for the event and the 4th year for the memorial ride, so she hopes that people realize that Heart for Life is a legitimate organization that cares about children. We hope they support our cause, she said. It's all appreciated, whatever they can donate. Last year, the group donated $10,000 to Rachel Link of Alvin, who had been injured in a car accident, so she could buy a handicapped accessible van. Then the group makes donations averaging $1,000 to other children in need. There is no strict application process, but Heart for Life does do some background checks and make sure there's a responsible adult to oversee the donation. Last year, recipients included a teenager undergoing chemo for lymphoma and an infant who needed heart surgery. This year, the main recipient will be Sintariri Kuhn, 13, a 7th grader who has leukodystrophy, which affects muscles and motor function. She's expected to be at the benefit, and the family wants to use the money to buy a computer with voice recognition for her. We're not a cure-all, Hutchins said. We're just easing the burden for families. The amount of money raised Saturday will determine how many children can be helped through the year. The support from the community has been overwhelming, he said. Ingargiola agreed that people have been very generous, not just for Heart for Life, but to help other causes that help children, and she appreciates that. This next headline, Ex-Area Residents Books Win Awards by Mary Wyckoff. In 2003, Michael Kinnett sold everything he owned, bought a travel trailer, and moved from central Illinois to Florida with his wife, Billy. I haven't regretted it a second yet, the Rossville native said in a telephone interview from Apalachicola, Florida. That move changed the course of his life as he became immersed in local history and ended up writing 2 award-winning books. Kinnett, 60, is author of the historic fiction books Appalachia Pearl, released in 2016, and Apalachicola Gold, which came out this year. A third book in the series is in the works. Earlier this month, Kinnett was recognized by the Florida Authors and Publishers Association, receiving 2 silver medals and 1 bronze medal in the categories of Florida Fiction Books for Adults and Adult Fiction Historical. This prestigious national award honors authors who go the extra mile to produce books of excellence. I can't believe it, Kinnett said of the awards. It's really a great honor. I still have trouble accepting it. In fact, becoming a recognized author is a goal that he can cross off his bucket list, he said. In his 2 books, Kinnett uses historic facts to bring to life a handful of fictional characters who tell the story of Apalachicola from 1822 through the Civil War. A small girl named Pearl struggles to survive in a world torn apart. Kinnett, a park ranger, gathered material for his book as part of his job giving tours at the 1838 Orman House Historic State Park Museum in Apalachicola. One fan who loved both books is Cindy Sellers Evans of Bismarck. I think he did a good job with his writing. I give him an A, said Sellers Evans, who taught English and reading for 32 years at Bismarck schools. The books are full of intrigue and adventure, she said, and they kept her attention. Readers will enjoy the action as well as the historical details woven into the story. You want to keep reading to see what's going to happen next to Pearl, she said, describing the main character as a precocious girl trying to make her way in the world. Sellers Evans has known Kinnett since 8th grade, and he married one of her best friends, Billy White of Alvin. Kinnett grew up on a farm 2 miles east of Rossville and graduated in 1975 from Rossville Alvin High School. His parents, Arliss and Marilyn, live in Rossville, and other relatives live in the area. His mother had an antique store, Little Folks and Country Critters, and ran Country Air Doll Hospital. Kinnett, known as the Piano Guy, also owned and operated Piano Works and the Refinishers in the Rossville area. He was 46 when he decided to sell everything and move to the Florida Panhandle. He started with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection in 2003, working at St. George Island State Park. In April 2007, he began caring for the Orman House Historic State Park in Apalachicola. As a full-time park services specialist, his job is to develop, maintain, and give tours of the museum and oversee the Chapman Botanical Garden. Over the years, Kinnett absorbed the history of the Apalachicola area and started writing a basic history. While driving to work one day, he got a storyline stuck in his head and decided to write that down later. 13 years of studying history poured out onto the page, he recalled. It took 4 months to write the first book, and then the second book flowed just as quickly. Kinnett didn't want to self-publish and was thrilled when a traditional publisher approved his manuscript. When he held the book in his hands for the first time, he said, "It's an incredible feeling. I sat there staring at it." He thought, "This can't be true. This must be a mistake." Kinnett had all of the historical background for his books. All he did was create a fictional character to take readers through that history. "History is presented as a stagnant pool of facts in school," he said, "but history flows and moves if you can find the truth of history. That's the fun part." Kinnett returns to the area periodically, saying, "You can't live in Illinois and not miss the seasons. I miss the fall and harvest most of all, the corn drying in the fields and the golden wheat, the cool mornings, and the nights in winter when it's so quiet and there's a full moon and beautiful snow." He and his wife have been married for 43 years and have two daughters, Jenny Blazik of Tallahassee, Florida, and Jessica Kinnett of Port St. Joe, Florida. The next article, Georgetown Pharmacy Plans Grand Opening. Georgetown Telepharmacy invites the public to a grand opening celebration on August 26th at the new business, 712 North Main Street. "We are truly grateful to be joining the community of Georgetown. Our staff looks forward to servicing the community and residents for many years to come with the new pharmacy location. We can't wait to see everyone at the grand opening celebration on Saturday, August 26th, owner Adonis Ducray said in a release. The grand opening will take place from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and will include a ribbon-cutting ceremony at 10 a.m., refreshments, special customer giveaway while supplies last, and a grand prize drawing to win a Kindle Fire or an Echo Dot. Georgetown Telepharmacy is a full-service pharmacy open 5 days a week. The store is a traditional retail pharmacy, offering everything customers expect from a pharmacy. Some of the services include veterinary prescriptions, video chat with pharmacists, automatic refills, and text-to-fill prescriptions. Bethany Hanner, CPHT, is the store manager. For information, call 217-601-2121. And now turning to the obituaries for today. From Danville, Stephen Brewer, 63 of Danville, passed away on August 12, 2017 in Utah. A celebration of Stephen's life will be held at the VFW, 8 Pine Street, Danville, on August 19th from 4 to 8 p.m. Charles B. Simpson, 89, of Bringhurst, Indiana, formerly of Danville, Illinois, passed away on August 14, 2017. A celebration of Charles's life will be at 11 a.m. Sunday, August 19th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, with Pastor Justin Snyder officiating. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Burial will take place at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorials can be made in his name to the church of your choice. From Danville, Henry Hooker. Henry Hooker, 85, of Danville, died Thursday, August 17th in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Roorevelt Funeral Services. John, also known as Jack Nicholson. John Thomas Jack Nicholson, 85, of Danville, died on Thursday, August 17th at the Franciscan Alliance Hospital in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the Pape Family Funeral Home on William Street in Danville. From Fairmount, Dan Shahan. Dan Shahan, 76, of Fairmount, passed away at 4:04 p.m. Friday, August 11th at the Champaign-Urbana Health and Rehab in Savoy. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 19th at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Chris Lawler will officiate. Visitation is from 10 a.m. until services Saturday at Robeson Chapel. Memorials in his name may be made to the American Diabetes Association. Also Danville, Rex E. Odell. Rex E. Odell, 85, of Danville, passed away August 16th at Hawthorne Inn in Danville. A celebration of Rex's life will take place at 1 p.m. Saturday, August 19th at St. James United Methodist Church, 404 North Vermilion in Danville, with Pastor Justin Snyder officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, August 18th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Entombment will take place at Sunset Swan Court Chapel Mausoleum. Memorials can be made in Rex's memory to St. James United Methodist Church. From Hoopston, Alice Trueblood. Alice May Voiles Trueblood, 86 of Hoopston, passed away at 7:54 p.m. Wednesday, August 16th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time Sunday, August 20th at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. The funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time Monday, August 21st at the funeral home with Pastor Clint Fink officiating. Burial will follow in Floral Hill Cemetery in Hoopston. Memorials may be made to the honor flight at Boswell Grade School, 414 West Main Street, Boswell, Indiana. Now, those are stated in Central Standard Time times, but it is Central Daylight Time, so you might want to check on those times. That's at the funeral home, which is Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston. Those are the only obituaries that we have for today. So an interesting article. From Baseball to Pulpit with Danger Along the Way. When Reverend William Greeson tells his own story, he stresses that God gave him the ability to throw a baseball, but that gift wasn't what mattered the most because his true home was a pulpit. Of course, that's exactly what a 92-year-old preacher is going to say hours before entering the Oklahoma Sports Hall of Fame for his trailblazing efforts as, in the words of sports scribes, Oklahoma City's Jackie Robinson, pitching for the Oklahoma City Indians in 1952. The Lord laid this on my heart, he said. You're going somewhere where you're not wanted. You gotta go and you gotta represent me, said Greeson in a guest sermon at Oklahoma City St. John Missionary Baptist Church just before the August 14th Hall of Fame rites. I've been careful about asserting myself, wanting to be in positions where I didn't have any business being. But it's been a blessing, though, to know you have a God who is able to do all things. Greeson's road to the pulpit was long and at times dangerous. Case in point, when the American flag was raised high on Iwo Jima's Mount Suribachi, Greeson was among the young Marines who saluted it from the beach. Watching his buddies die in combat was tougher than facing jeers and sprays of beer from racist fans. His former Birmingham Black Barons teammate Willie Mays put it this way in a tribute to Greeson. He was a groundbreaker in Oklahoma City, a World War II veteran honored for his service, a man of God, and a good friend to many. Greeson's sermon was a revelatory moment after 7 years of work building the case to honor him, said amateur sports historian Mark House. Everyone knew Greeson still preaches almost every Sunday at Birmingham's Bethel Baptist Church, where he has served since 1969. But seeing him in action was a shock. He has always been a somewhat quiet, reserved, and humble person, said House. It was a surprise and inspiring to see him robe up for the first time, take the pulpit within his grasp, and escalate to that level of delivery. The sermon, now on YouTube, ranged from the Garden of Eden to Good Friday, from Easter morning to visions of heaven. Amens from the pews turned to shouts of yes, sir, during the final cadences. There were so many memories, from post-atomic bomb horrors while stationed in Nagasaki to life in Oklahoma City YMCA, back when a few people would talk to an African-American baseball player. White teammates brought his food to the bus when restaurants refused him service. After baseball, Birmingham church leaders faced life with the city's infamous Commissioner of Public Safety, Theophilus Eugene Bull Connor. That was then. But believers faced even tougher challenges today, because old sins are now dividing homes and churches, as well as the nation, said Greeson on a weekend when Americans were rattled by hellish news reports from Charlottesville, Virginia. We are in a crisis, y'all, a crisis of inclusiveness and exclusiveness. Even among those of us who profess to be Christians, we are kind of choosy in who we share fellowship with, he said. It's like some people are even afraid to be together in church because someone might come in and shoot up the place with all of us together. If you're afraid that that's going to happen, don't come. The preacher at times spread his arms wide as if trying to pull the flock in tight. Husbands don't want wives, wives don't want husbands, and parents don't want children. This is a crisis where seemingly everybody wants their own way. We don't want to be together. We don't want to come together, said Greeson. We've got a problem from the White House to the church house. From the White House to the church house, we don't want Jesus in our lives. I believe right now God is speaking and nobody's paying any attention. At the end, the Reverend Major Jemison, pastor of St. John Missionary Baptist, was wiping his forehead and his eyes. Have mercy, he said as Greeson returned to his seat. Yes, sir, I want all of that at age 92. That's preaching. And that was a religion columnist, Terry Mattingly, who is the editor of GetReligion.org and senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. A little bit of sports news. Buffaloes make changes. Kavanaugh returns and will try to lead the team to a winning record by Chad Dare from Georgetown. Expectations in athletics can change quickly. After five straight playoff appearances from 2011 to 2015, the Georgetown Ridge Farm Buffaloes missed the postseason a year ago with a 3-6 record, and they come into the 2000 campaign without a lot of hype. We are kind of a ghost town right now, said junior running back linebacker Landon Noggle. There isn't a lot of people expecting too much from us after going 3-6 last year. We're trying to come back from that and turn it around. One losing season can create a bad reputation, but it can turn into a positive if we get things turned around this year. One thing that definitely did change with the Georgetown Ridge Farm program this year was the head coaching position. Josh Kavanaugh, who was the head coach from 2010-2013, is back at the helm replacing Nathan West. We are definitely not going to be the same team that we were last year, said junior lineman Wyatt Mosier. We have changed things around this year. We have a different attitude and a different work ethic. People think of Georgetown football as the 3-6 team that we were last year. We've lost the respect that we had, and we need to get it back. Both Mosier and Noggle point out that the Buffaloes have a lot more experience than last year's squad. We were really young, and we needed more experience, Noggle said. This year, we've got that experience, and I think we will be ready for the season. We weren't working as well as a team last year, like we have so far this year. I think that comes from our experience in learning how to face adversity better. And while the experience is a positive, Kavanaugh admits that this group is basically starting over this season. I don't know how much value that will have with the number of changes that we've made on both sides of the ball, Kavanaugh said. This summer, during 7-on-7 competitions, we would make some mistakes. And then we would realize we also have a lot of kids playing this year that didn't play football in the past. And the Buffaloes expect to have senior Austin Hinchman at the quarterback this season. Hinchman, who played that position as a freshman and a little last year, is looking forward to this year. In junior football, I just played all over the field, he said. My freshman year, I went to quarterback, but then I broke my wrist and moved to wide receiver. How about the new coach? Coach Kavanaugh has changed a lot of things, Hinchman said, but it hasn't been a difficult transition because we knew him from school. We knew what to expect from him. It's just a different head coach, Noggle added. Things have come very natural and we're ready to play football. Remaining in the school district as a teacher has definitely made things different for Kavanaugh. This is a bigger team than we had before when I was here, he said. I don't have to wonder completely who these kids are, but I know who they are and know what they can and can't do from the classroom. That has been very beneficial. Kavanaugh, whose son Connor is a senior lineman for the Buffaloes, said this group has adapted very well to his changes. They have been very flexible from our practice schedules to the new language we are going to use on offense and defense, he said. It's been a lot more work than I remember, but these kids are doing what it takes to make the transition as easy as possible. One thing that has been difficult for Kavanaugh is knowing the other teams in the Vermilion County Valley Conference. People are always asking me how good we're going to be, he said. I can honestly say I don't know. Being away from the VVC for the last 3 years, coaching at different schools, I don't have a good pulse on the VVC. I remember and know it's a very good league, but I'm not sure how we're going to stack up against the other teams. His players, in particular Mosier, are willing to cover that one for their coach. We want to become a playoff team again and contend for the conference championship, he said. That's the kind of expectations that every team places on itself at this point in the season. Headline reads, Indiana Church to Restore 104-Year-Old Windows by Mitchell Kirk from Anoka, Indiana. When Mary B. Frey thinks about the stained glass windows in Anoka United Methodist Church, the church's Easter Sunday sunrise services come to mind. You sit here and it's coming up through the east and the sun's coming in. It just makes it a reverent place, she said. But after 104 years, the sagging and buckling of the church's original stained glass windows, along with the cracks throughout them, are demanding their restoration. Church leaders have launched a fundraising campaign to preserve the 17 windows they say have been a significant part of the church and their connections to it. Trey Yon Jay, who chairs the church's board of trustees, measured the temperature of one of the stained glass windows on Tuesday, August 15th, and said it was reading over 100 degrees. The day before, he said the window was 140 degrees. The high temperature means that the lead deteriorates more quickly, he said, adding the church's windows have outlived their design life by almost 30 years. Jay said the church intends to enlist Fort Wayne-based William L. Lupkin Designs to restore the windows. It'll take about a year, he added. Workers will do a third of the windows at a time and start by making a stencil of each one so they know exactly how it goes back together, Jay said. Then they tape everything together so it doesn't come crashing apart as they get it out of the frame, he continued. They'll take the entire window out, Jay went on to say, and transport it back to their shop to be dismantled. The church's large stained glass windows have glass behind them, but the other smaller windows will need to be boarded up in the interim, Jay said. During the restoration, the windows' rotting wood frames will be replaced with aluminum ones, he said. New panes will replace cracked pieces of glass. Plate glass will be installed outside the windows for protection, Jay also said. He said the first third of the windows may be replaced by Christmas. Three of the larger windows have medallions respectively depicting a Bible, a dove, and a lamb, representing Jesus on the book of Revelation with the seven seals described in that final book of the New Testament. We're lucky the medallions are all in good shape because those are expensive to redo, Jay said. The project is estimated to cost about $150,000. Jay said his family joined Anoka United Methodist Church during World War I. He grew up at the church and remembers the days before its air conditioning was installed, when staying cool meant using hand fans and opening stained glass windows, which he demonstrated on Tuesday. It's how we grew up. It's a part of the character of the church, he said of the windows. We're not ready to knock it down and build a contemporary one. We have some sentimental attachment to it. Average Sunday attendance is about 60, Jay said. For a small church, I'd say we have a pretty long reach, Frey said. We do a lot in the community, and it's just on U.S. 35, just a little beacon here. 104 years, it's quite a tradition. The thing that's impressive to me is that it's been maintained as it was built. Jean Helvey, an Anoka UMC parishioner, lives near the church, and she said she enjoys getting to look at the windows on a regular basis. They're most beautiful at night when something's going on here at the sanctuary, Helvey said. Jim Mayhill, who was married in the church, said many others also tied the knot there and that the new couples often take pictures posing in front of the windows. The church is seeking help with the cost of the window restoration. Donors can make tax-deductible contributions to Anoka United Methodist Church, P.O. Box 209, Logansport, Indiana, 46947. The church's monthly breakfasts on the third Saturday of each month throughout the school year will be starting back up again soon. The next one will be at 7:30 to 10 a.m. Saturday, September 16th at the church, located at 4890 East, 300 South. It will be by donation and proceeds will go to the restoration project. With no endowment funds, Jay said in an email that the church often tackles capital projects through the generosity of its congregation and friends. Rather than rely on an endowment, our capital projects have been successful because of the financial support of the congregation, friends, neighbors, and our extended church family, he said. And one last note, under community briefs, there will be a pep rally on Saturday. Danville District 118 invites the public to a free community pep rally for the 2017 DHS Vikings football team from 3 to 6 p.m. Saturday at the David S. Palmer Arena on Main Street. Meet the football team. There also will be bounce houses, games, face painting, balloon figures, motivational speakers, hot dogs, popcorn, and snow cones. And that's about it for today. That's all we have time for. This is Kathy signing off, wishing you a good weekend, and we'll be back with you on.